Welcome to everybody in the room and everybody joining us via the brand new live stream. I'm Carrie DeAngelis. I'm a vendor operations manager with Liberty Mutual, and I'll be your MC for today's session. I am thrilled to be here today to help support the advancement of women leaders across the state. At Liberty Mutual, we are committed to empowering women and engaging men for our combined success. Our Women's Employee Resource Group, at Liberty, is focused on building a culture of open communication and inclusiveness, providing mentorship and events that support collaboration, community, and innovation. This is my fourth year in attendance at the Texas Conference for Women, and I've always benefited from such great advice, such strong practical tools, and really the opportunity to network with such intelligent, driven leaders. So it's really conferences like these that inspire all of us to make our marks in our communities, our careers, and our companies. And I want to thank all of you for participating in this session. Networking and mentoring build relationships, not just contacts. We have an amazing hour in store for you, and I'm so honored to introduce Laura Oakman. Laura is the founder of Galvanize, an organization that conducts seminars around the country, teaching participants how to build their own networks and foundations. She established the Stuart Scott Minority Scholarship in memory of her best friend and ESPN anchor. Laura is a seasoned reporter for the NFL on Fox and Westwood One's NFL national radio games. She's covered more than 10 Super Bowls, hosted coverage for 3 Olympic Games, and reported from numerous World Series, NBA, and NHL championships. Please welcome Emmy Award-winning sports reporter, Laura Oakman.
Hello, everybody. Hello, Austin. I was excited just to say that. Hello, Austin. As you can probably imagine, I'm used to rooms of big people, but usually when I look out, it's all men's faces. I work with men. I've been a guy's girl my whole life. I travel with men. I'm on a team that travels to NFL games every week. It's about 65 people. 63 are men. So I never, ever take for granted being in rooms full of women. So I'd love for you to indulge me for a moment. What I want you to do is, I was going to say look to your left, but then I'll have a whole room looking in one direction. That's not right. I'm going to need you all to help me with this. Look to the person next to you. What I want you to say is just, I'm rooting for you, sister. Now, hold on. I'm rooting for you, sister. Then turn to the other person. You see why it would have been weird if you all looked in one direction. Turn around and say it to the next person. If you are sitting next to a man, first of all, gentlemen, thank you for being here. You are our greatest ally, so thank you for being here. So I'm rooting for you, sister, or I'm rooting for you, brother. Go. It's good. That was good. But can I just say this? These rooms are magic. These rooms, it took me 30 years to get into rooms like this. So couldn't we do it again with more feeling? I'm rooting for you, sister. Mean it. I'm rooting for you, brother. I knew Austin was going to bring it, you guys. I knew this. I will never, ever waste one of these rooms from the second I get in to the second I leave. And I don't want to talk about leaving. I want to just settle in right now because I'm so excited to be here. So are you all ready to do this? Are we ready to go? All right, Austin, let's do this. So let me start by having Carrie time something for me really quickly. And I'm going to reintroduce myself real fast. You ready, Carrie? Okay. I have been a sports broadcaster for over 25 years. I've been a small market reporter to network. I traveled with Michael Jordan and the Chicago Bulls for 3 championships. Pretty cool for a Chicago girl. Won an Emmy. I then became the 3rd longest tenured sideline reporter in NFL history, working for the NFL on Fox and working for Westwood One Radio. I own a production company so I could create and own content. I have a company for women in sports, and I am a communications coach for businesses, Super Bowl coaches, and for 200 of the top professional women hockey players in the world. Carrie, how long did that take? 35 seconds. No, 35 seconds, but thank you, because usually I do 32 seconds, so thank you for supporting me a little longer than I'd like to go. 35 seconds, I used to think that defined me. I used to think that's who I was. And it takes 35 seconds. 35 seconds to tell you what I do. That is not my who. My who takes a little longer than 35 seconds. That's my favorite part of the journey. So it should take a little bit longer. That's the fun part. That's the interesting part. That's the real part. And that is where you want to be. Not the do, the who. For a very long time, my who was a young girl who lost her mom to cancer. That's who I was. That defined me for a long time. And then my who shifted, as whos tend to do. My who became a young woman who was told, you better have a backup dream, because a girl can't talk sports, right? That's crazy. How can a girl talk sports? You don't know what you're talking about. And then my who changed again. It went from, great, you can talk sports, but I better enjoy it, because I'm not going to be able to talk about it for long, because a woman aging on camera, that's a very, very short window. So you better enjoy it while you can. So that was my who for a long time. And I feared that, and I believed that, until I did it. So now I stand here in this room that shall not be wasted with a new who. This who, I stand here as a woman way past her window. That window was a while ago. Way past her window, never been happier, never been more fulfilled, never been more in love with my new life, with my new husband, with my new opportunities, and these incredible rooms I now find myself in. That is my who. And I wear that really loudly because, boy, it took me a long time to get here. That journey to my who started on an airplane. I was 40 years old. I had one thing to show for it, a job. I was on a plane, and everyone thought it was going down. Devastating, very dramatic drop. Masks come down. People start screaming. People start yelling. People start praying. People start crying. And I sat there, and I didn't care. And I'll tell that story to people, and they'll always go, oh, you didn't care because you were at peace. And I'm like, no, I didn't care. And they'll say, oh, because you accomplished what you wanted to accomplish. And I'll say, no, I didn't care. But when we did land, thank God, I made a vow right there, right the second we touched down, that I would start creating a life that I would care desperately if a plane, God forbid I was ever in, went down. So my work began. It wasn't easy. I started every morning the same way. I would open my eyes, and I had this one thought, and it would be the same thought every morning. I don't know what makes me happy. Paralyzed me. Eyes open, I don't know what makes me happy, and I would just lay there. It was so hard to get out of bed. I had no reason to get out of bed. And one day, all I did was I changed the inflection. Eyes open, I don't know what makes me happy. And I could get out of bed to that. That was an opening. That was a possibility. That was a question. So my work began. So what I started to do, my rule was, anything that was presented to me, any invitation, any opportunity, no matter how big, no matter how small, I would have to ask the question, will doing that make me happy? And if the answer was, I don't know, I had to do it. So it was during this time that a girlfriend reached out to me. And she said, do you want to go on this great trip? We're going to go to a place in the desert. And it's one of those places where you work on yourself mentally, emotionally, spiritually. You do all of that. Now, I had never, ever done a vacation with a girlfriend. I didn't let anyone close enough. That was a big step for me. But I said, I'll do it. But if we go, you've got to make a promise with me. We've got to do all the things that make us uncomfortable emotionally, anything vulnerable. Because she was the same way I was. We both had a wall up. So she said, okay, deal, but I am going to throw in a deal for you. Now, my girlfriend, her do is a lawyer. Her who, she's a bit crazy. She's a thrill seeker. She's one of those that will bungee jump off anything, you know, a bridge, a building, anything. She will fly, she flies planes. She's a pilot by hobby, by who. She is a thrill seeker. I am not. But would doing something physically challenging myself make me happy? Probably not. I was pretty sure it wouldn't, but I didn't know for sure. So I said, we have a deal. And so I picked one thing. There's a whole bunch of things, but there was one, and it was just jumping off a 40-foot pole. How many of you like, does anyone think that sounds fun, jumping off a 40? There's always a few crazy ones. There's always a few of you. So I said yes, but only because that was the least daunting thing. Everything else was a little more intense, and I thought, 40-foot pole, I can do it. So we get to this place. We get to this 40-foot pole. There's a group of 8 of us, and I go right up to the guide immediately, and I have a serious question, and I'm just going to be honest with you all when I say this, because this, I feel like this is a safe space here. I had something so heavy on my mind, and I really wanted to make sure that I said it. I had a facial at noon that I needed to get to. And before I'm judged for this, this is one of those places, it's not, I don't even want to call it a facial, I want to call it an experience, because it is one, like it's just a really special thing. And I'm nervous about this. I know we start at 10 a.m., but I don't know when we finish, and that facial's at noon. So I say to the guide, hey, this is the only activity I've seen that doesn't have an end time. Just curious, when are we finishing? And he just looks at me, just sweetly, and he said, oh, that's the fun part. Depends on all of you, doesn't it? And I was like, oh boy, I want to get to this facial. And my reporter instinct kicks in really quickly. I start turning on the group. And I'm looking, because you know how there's always that one person? That one person who's going to break down, and they're going to cry, and they're going to make it about them. Even though it's a group activity, someone's going to turn it into that personal therapy session. There's always that one. So I'm looking around the room. And I land on a pregnant woman. And I'm already like, why is she jumping off a 40-foot pole? Is this safe? Should she be here? So my eyes are on her. Obviously, my judgment is a little bit on her, too. Why is she here? So I'm nervous, but I settle back, and I'm ready to root everybody out. First person goes up, and they just, whoop, go up, jump down. Second person, up, down, and I'm feeling kind of good. Third person, up, down. Here comes the pregnant woman. I'm nervous. I'm literally crossing my fingers. She goes up quicker than everybody. Gets up there and just flies down. So I go, and I'm like, awesome, I'm going to make my facial. This is terrific. And I get about halfway up, and I ask myself, does this make me happy? No, it really did not make me happy. So I do what anybody would do. I start to climb down, right? It doesn't make me happy. And the guy just takes a step, and he goes, oh, hold on. Don't go anywhere. What's going on? And I'm like, absolutely nothing. Please, let's not make this a big deal. I don't like this. I actually don't really like heights. I'm here for her. Let her go up. I don't want to do this. I know people have things to do. I'm going to climb down. I start to climb down. He takes another step up and goes, hold on. Just stay there for a second. What's going on? And I'm like, honestly, nothing. Let's please not make this about me anymore. I'm going to climb down and let the next person go. And he says, just sit there. What are you thinking about? And at that very second, I realized the person who's going to hold us up, the person who's going to break down, is me. And I do. I start doing something I've never done in front of people I don't know, let alone people I do know. I start to cry heavily. And he says, what are you thinking about? And I say, my whole life, this whole career I've built has been spent asking people, what have you overcome? What's the hardest thing you've done? What adversity have you faced, and how did you get through it? And here I am on this pole and in my life facing the biggest obstacles and adversity I've ever faced, and I just want to climb down. I don't want to go up. And this pregnant woman takes a step up and she says, "Can I talk to you for a second?" And I'm like, obviously, I'm not going anywhere. What do you have? And so she says, "I've known you for about 45 minutes. And I already can tell you that I know if you climb down, you are going to get to your bed tonight. Boy, are you going to curse yourself out. You are going to get in that bed and be like, this was an entire waste, this whole trip. You told me you're here to make a difference, to be different. You told me you're here to make a change. And if you climb down right now, you've changed nothing." And she was right. So she said, "Can I hang here with you? Can I help you get up this pole?" And I said, "Please." So she did, so slowly, so gently, so kindly. She talked me up very slowly that pole. Now I got up to that pole, and boy, it was shaking, and I'd love to tell you it was windy. It was not. I'm standing there, but I stood there long enough to just say a prayer. And that prayer was, "May this be the first pole of many that I find the courage to leap from." And I jumped. Now, the only thing back then I hated more than crying in front of people would have been people making a big deal about me. But suddenly I land and here comes everybody. They're screaming, they're crying, they're hugging me. And I'm sitting there thinking, this feels really good. Vulnerability felt really good. And the guide is the last person. He wraps his arms around me and I whisper in his ear, "I am so sorry. How long was I up there for?" And he said, "You were up there as long as you needed to be." And he was right. So at the very end, we get into a group. And you go around and you talk about your experience. It was very quick for most people. They had fun. They climbed and they leaped and they were ready for lunch. And it gets to me, everybody laughs, and the pregnant woman says, "Can I take your turn?" And I was like, "Please do, I have nothing else to give." So she says, "I'm also here to do the work. I never wanted to be a mother. My mother left us when we were very young. I've never had a relationship with her. And before this trip, I found out I was having a girl. And I came here asking for a sign, showing me that I could do this. And I just got my sign. I've never felt more motherly than right now talking you up this pole." The rest of the week, that group would find me wherever I was, and they would run to me, and they would be like, "I'm trying so hard to find my pole. I'm looking for my pole everywhere. My purpose has changed." And I thought, how funny. They were running to poles. I'd spent my whole life running from them. So what does all of this have to do with building relationships? Absolutely everything. That leap changed my life. Everything was about finding my who from that moment on, not just everybody else's. I stopped telling everybody else's story. Let me rephrase that. I stopped hiding behind everybody else's story. And I started focusing on my own. Everything wasn't fine. Everything wasn't, "I'm okay." And you know what happened? As soon as I said what really was happening in my mind and my heart, my relationships got so much deeper. Pre-poll, if you would have asked anybody in my life, "Tell me something about Laura," they'd go, "She's great. If you want a therapist, go to Laura. You can tell her anything, and it's a vault. She'll never tell anyone." And they'd go, "That's awesome. Tell me about her parents. Are they alive? How many siblings does she have?" I have one right here in the front row, by the way. "How many siblings does she have? Is she married? Does she have kids? Does she have a dog?" And they'd go, "I don't know." And not because they didn't try, and not because they didn't want to, but because I didn't share. So that led to the next question. Would sharing make me happy? Challenge accepted. So one of the things I challenged myself to do after that was to engage on airplanes. I'm on them all the time, you guys. That's my life. So that's really where I spend the majority of my time. Everybody groan who hates the people when you sit down in an airplane and they are there to chat with you and start discussing things. Groan if you hate that. Yeah, so I did too. I hated that. I was one of those ones who got on a plane, I put on the headset, I got into my work immediately, and I started thinking, I wonder how many relationships I've missed all these years and all these plane rides. How many connections I had completely missed out on. So I made a rule. I was going to start talking to people on airplanes if they wanted to. Believe me, I read the room well. But I was going to start engaging on airplanes. But I did have a rule. I couldn't ask what they do. Who are you? That was it. That was the only thing that was allowed to be talked about. And I was very clear about that. The first person I did that with on an airplane wound up introducing me to my husband. That's my favorite part. I love that awe. The second part, I still feel the awe. The second person wound up being the first person to eventually say to me, "Have you ever thought about being a communications coach? I have something I want to bring to you." Completely shifted my world. I had never thought about that in a million years. She's now one of my best friends. The third person just wound up partnering up with my husband with an incredible love project that they wound up completing last year. Three people who completely changed my life. Three people all at my wedding. None of that would have happened if we talked about our jobs or what we did. It was all about difficult divorces, parents passing, and things we've overcome and challenges at different age of our lives. All who, no do. I learned that lesson very early. The key, when you're building relationships, building those bridges, no agenda. And that's hard sometimes, but that's the most important thing. If we are talking building relationships or mentoring right now, and I know that seems counterintuitive, right? Because mentoring has an agenda. Building relationships is the end result. That's the agenda, nothing else. How I learned that was as a young reporter. I normally ask if anybody is sports fans, and usually I get nervous when I ask, but I'm in Texas. How many of you are sports fans? All right, Texas. So when I was a very young reporter, I covered NBA Hall of Famer Charles Barkley. And I should have said, are you all real sports fans? Thank you. So Charles gave me one of my greatest lessons. I called him one day, and he answered the phone, and he said, "Well, well, well, Laura Oakman, what do you need?" And I was like, "Ooh, can't a girl just call and say hello?" And he says, "Sure, a girl can. You just never do." So I'm not giving you grief, or another word, because it's Charles Barkley, but I'm not giving you grief. I just know when you call, you need something. So what do you need? I felt horrible, right? Like, who wants to be that person when the phone rings? We have them, right? When you look down and you're like, "Ugh, what do they want?" Because that's when they call. I didn't want to be that person. So that conversation changed everything about me. I was thinking at the time, why would I call him? I'm not going to say congratulations on a win. I'm not going to say, "What'd you do this weekend?" And I also didn't want to send a wrong message. So I just called when I needed something. But now I had work to do. How do I mind all that? But how do I make sure that I'm building a real relationship and not just when I need things? That exchange completely changed my life. Right now, on a Sunday for an NFL game, I have about 7 hours when I'm on a field. And I finish that after 7 hours, and that's the first part of my day. I get into my car to go head to the airport. For the next hour or two, I look at every single game I wasn't at. And I text every head coach, assistant coach, general manager, player that I have a relationship. Congratulations on the win. So sorry about the loss. More importantly, I reach when no one else is reaching. So sorry about the loss, or most importantly, sorry about the injury, sending healing thoughts your way. I don't ask a question. I'm not trying to engage. I'm not trying to make them respond. I just want them to know I'm thinking about them. I want to make sure that they know that I'm not only just showing up, and that's when I need something. Now, I don't just do that in job, on a field. I do that in life. Once a month, I reach out to every one of my bosses. Once a month, maybe 2 months. And I will say, "Do you have time for lunch? No agenda." And I stick to that rule. We will have lunch, and inevitably, they will always bring up something about your job. It's kind of what we do, right? How can I help? You know, what are you really here for? And I will say immediately, "I'm not here to talk about work, but I would love to talk about that eventually. I'll call your office to set up an appointment with that. But let's just keep this no agenda." They always know when I don't have one. That's the most important thing. Tuesdays, I have a day called Relationship Tuesday. All I do is I text, I email, and I call with no agenda, just checking in to see how everybody is. So it's common for them to hear from me. I make sure that is as a person. I make sure that that is as a reporter. When I started training players and how to vet reporters and how to handle media coaching and training, I called a player that I had spent about 10 years covering, and it took me 2 years to get in with him. He has what he calls a bubble. And for 2 years, I would say to him, I'm getting in that bubble. And he'd go, you're not getting near that bubble. And I'm like, I'm getting in that bubble. So 2 years later, I was welcomed into the bubble. And I said, how do I teach that? What was it? How did I get in? And he said, it's easy. You reach out 10 times, but you ask for something once. I immediately thanked him, and I hung up, and I called Charles Barkley, and I thanked him for the most important, most valuable lesson I ever learned. So how do you build that relationship? How do you build that bridge when you're building the relationship? You know that wonderful Maya Angelou quote, people don't remember what you say, they remember how you make them feel? I lived there. I remember being so young and walking into a party and being so nervous, because you know how you start thinking, what am I gonna say? How do I make people remember me? What do I tell them? And you start thinking, how can I be impressive? How can I make sure that they know who I am? That was me as a young woman. Now, it's all about you. It's not about how I feel. How do I make you feel good? I go into every room that I don't know people, and I make sure I have a pocket full of questions. But they're questions that I truly, truly want to know the answer to. So I feel like every room I walk into, I'm prepared. I'm ready to build that relationship instead of what do? The first time I put on a seminar for women, this is how I learned the questions. I was sitting outside the room and giving name tags out. And each woman would come in and I would give them their name tag and they would walk in. So I'm here, and presently I'm here. But I got one ear to the back. And I hear what's happening. They have about a half hour before we start, but they're mingling before. And I hear everything going on. And the conversation is, what do? What's your status? You can kind of hear what that is. Who do you know? What sorority are you in for my young ones? What experience do you have? And I'm sitting outside that room going, oh boy, this is going to take me all day to undo. And it did. So I started thinking, what can I do to make sure that every time I'm in a room, every time that there's a room full of new people, how do I make sure nobody's sizing each other up? And we all know what that means. That's sizing yourself up, right? So I had to think about, what's the common denominator? It doesn't matter what age you're in, what stage you're in. When you walk in a room, what can we all relate to? The one I thought was fear. We all fear something, right? So what I did for the next seminar, that was 10 years ago, and I do this every single one, you know, to this day, they now have to walk in and put their first name on a name tag, and then underneath, what is the biggest fear that paralyzes you as you walk into this room? What's keeping you up at night? What's the one fear as we start this day? There is no small talk. That's 7 a.m. The only thing they're allowed to talk about is introduce themselves with their fear. And if it's something that you're going through that I've overcome, I'm going to give you a piece of advice. If it's something that you're going through and I'm struggling too, I'm going to hang with you and I'm going to talk. So at 7 a.m, we don't know jobs, we don't know titles, we don't know anything except the fear of letting somebody down, the fear of letting yourself down, the fear of failure, the fear of not getting pregnant, the fear of cancer returning. That's where we start our day. And that completely, completely changes the day. About a month ago, I worked with the Carolina Panthers. Now, let me just explain. When I work an NFL game on Fridays, my team travels, and we go to the host team, and we meet with the head coach, coaches, and players. 5 people in a room, 4 men or 5 men and me. We sit in a room, and we talk about football. I walk out with each person individually, and I get to talk about the who. It's my favorite part. So with the Panthers, I know that I'm meeting with the quarterback, Cam Newton. Who just wooed? So conversations with Cam can be challenging. I don't mean Cam is challenging. I mean conversations with Cam. He is so acutely aware of intent. He is so acutely aware of agenda. So I have to think about it when I have a conversation with him. What do I want to talk about to really have that relationship versus talk about football? So I did my research and I read this great article about something he did during the off season where he spoke to kids. And one of the kids was interviewed, and this kid said something that really stuck with him was Cam said, "I'm worried that the best is behind me." I got that. So on this Friday, I walk out with Cam in the hallway and I say to him, "Can I tell you a story?" And Cam looks at me. I wish I could give that face, but you know probably the face that Cam would give to me, but a skeptical face, let's just say that, and said, "Go ahead." So I tell him about that place with the pole. Now, here's the thing with that place. It's all about present. It's all about be where your feet are, right? But there's one thing you can do with that place that lets you look back to your past and lets you look ahead to your future. Any guesses? Someone always yells out psychic. There's always that one. It's a psychic. And I didn't know how I felt about psychics, but would seeing one make me happy? I didn't know, so I went. And it's about an hour, and all of a sudden, I mean, it's amazing. And she's blowing my mind. And I'm sitting there just, with my mouth open. And she says, "Okay, we're about done. Ask your last question, and that's going to be the end." And I said, "Oh, I don't have anything. This has been so overwhelming. Like, my brain is, so full. I'm good. I don't have one. Thank you." And she said, "No, ask your question." And I said, I really, truly don't. Who's going to lie to a psychic? Like, she knows if I'm lying. So I'm like, I really don't have one. And she said, "I need you to stop talking. I need you to clear your head. I need you to take a breath. And I need you to say the first question that pops in your head, because that is the whole answer that you are looking for." I really didn't have a question. But I did what she said. I stopped talking. I cleared my mind. I took a breath. And all of a sudden, I hear a voice. And I hear this question: "Have I peaked?" I was 40. I thought that was very old at that time. I was 40 years old. I was in such a sad, lonely marriage, and I never knew if I'd ever find the courage to get out, and knew for a very long time how over it was. I had nobody close to me in my life. I wouldn't let anybody in. No one knew how sad I was. Everyone knew that I had a job that I loved. And I checked off every one of those boxes of everything I could ever imagine. And yet, I didn't care if the plane I was in crashed. She paused, and she looked at me, and she took my hand across the table. And she said, "Oh, honey, you're not even going to believe how good it's about to get for you." And she was so right. That moment changed everything. Everything. I don't share that story with everyone. I very rarely share it, except lately with rooms of a lot of people. But I certainly don't share it with NFL players I cover. But there I was on a hallway on a Friday sharing it with Cam. And Cam put his hand on his heart and looked like I'd punched him. And he was like, "You have no idea how much I needed to hear that today." And gave me one of the most genuine, beautiful hugs I've had this entire season. You don't get that from talking about football. You don't get that from talking about your job. You don't get that from talking about your due. And that leads me to you wonderful people. This feels very due to me still. I still struggle with this. It feels very due, me talking and you listening. So this part is when we all get in this together. So I'm going to ask you all to do something. Sometimes I hear a groan, but let me just say this. The only regrets I ever hear, and I do get DMs and texts and emails after these, people will say, "I wish I would have done that. I'm sorry I didn't." If you are sitting next to someone you know well, I already have a few of you that I know might know each other well, I just need you to switch one seat. Just sit next to someone you don't know. Okay, that's it. And be honest. Again, this is the regret. If you sit with someone that you know and you know their story, it's going to be a little bit different. Thank you. I love when people, literally start walking. I don't hear the groan, so that will make me feel happy, but I do see a lot of annoyance. Are you guys okay here? What's happening? I see three. Okay. All right. Oh, thank you for making the change to the next row. Okay, so this is it. This is how we start. This is so easy, okay? One of you, you decide. One of you is going to be the reporter role, and one of you is going to be the interviewee role. We're switching, so it doesn't matter. You're both stuck with each role. But decide who's going first. I'm going to give you 2.5 minutes. I know what you can do in 2.5 minutes because that's usually what I get for an interview. And this part is easy. Just decide who's the reporter first, and for 2.5 minutes, get to know your partner. That is all. That's the only direction I'm giving you for this first one, okay? 2.5 minutes when I say go, but here's my other rule. When I say stop, you have to stop. The last place, we had to start, like, turning lights on and off. So I want you engaged, but not that engaged. I'm going to call you back. So when you hear me start stomping, come back to me. 2.5 minutes, decide who your reporter is first, and just get to know your partner, okay? In 3, 2, 1, go. And stop. And stop. Reporters who thought that felt very long. People being interviewed who thought that felt very long. Oh, nice. Okay, switch roles. 2.5 minutes. Switch roles. Get to know your other partner. Ready? And go. And stop. And stop. Come back to me. Come back to me. And stop. Again, I'm always torn. I want you engaged, but not that engaged. Come back, come back. How many of you, be honest, raise your hand, did you talk jobs? If you talk jobs, raise your hand. Not bad, not bad. If you talked kids, siblings, partners, if you talked where you're from, I can Google all of that. Right? LinkedIn, Facebook. I can find all of that out just by searching your name. How many of you have ever left an interview or left a party and been like, oh, I didn't even give myself a chance? Right? You know that feeling of like you just answered questions so you never got to really say who you are, show who you are. My fantasy is to be able to change the whole concept of business cards. Instead of name, what I do, I would love it to say, your name, and then underneath, if you want to get to know me, if you really want to get to know me, you need to know this. What's your this? Wouldn't that be the best business card? If you give me an airplane, if you give me a room full of strangers, I'm going to make someone cry. I hope nobody is flying Southwest back to Nashville at 3 o'clock. And I'll know if you do because you will move quickly by my room. But I will make somebody feel because I want to know what your this is. So we're going to do this again, but we're going to go deeper. Right? Stuff you can't Google. So how I want you to do this is go back to the first reporter, go back to your how you did it originally. And what I want you to do is start with that question. If I want to get to know you, if I really want to get to know you, I need to know this. What's your this? 2.5 minutes to figure that out, okay? And challenge accepted, challenge accepted. And go. And stop. And stop. Feels a little different, doesn't it? All right, ready? We're going to switch. 2.5 minutes. If you want to get to know me, you really want to get to know me, you need to know this about me. Go. And stop. And stop. Okay. Now that both sides did it, raise your hand really if it felt different. That if it felt different, if that conversation felt different than the first one. That's what every conversation should feel like. That's the goal. I really don't do small talk. So people always say, well, what do? You just like throw out a question? I do. And that's not, trust me, when I was young and being told constantly you don't know what you're talking about, you start thinking you don't know what you're talking about. So I was really afraid to use my voice. I was always in fear of saying the wrong thing. So what this does is gives you that, those questions I said, keep it in your pocket so you always have something meaningful to say, to ask, to have a real conversation. I'm really upfront with my questions. I don't just spring it on you, what's your this? But what I will say is, I'm working on something. I'm working on my who versus my do. Have you done that work? If I asked you if you have the difference or know the difference between your who and your do, could you tell me? I'll start a conversation like that on a plane, trust me. One of my favorite conversations to have for my golfers, I love to ask people, if I gave you a mulligan, for my non-golfers, that basically means a do-over. If I gave you a do-over, and I said you could use this on anything in your life, what would you use it on? Would you use it? My favorites are the people who don't. I love to ask that question. If I was going to make you put on a name tag and I would ask you to put your fear on it, what would you write right now? Or if it was today or if it was 6 years from now, I would say I just was at a conference and somebody was asking, and we were doing an exercise about, if I want to get to know you, what is your this? I'm honest about it. And I ask those questions. That to me is the difference of turning every relationship I have from what do you do, how many siblings do you have, where are you from, to really truly knowing a person. And again, I know I said it, but when you have those questions, truly know and care about the answer you want to get. It's not just what can I ask to fill time? What can I ask to be impressive? What do I really, really want to know about somebody? That's where you live. My this, it changes all the time. For the longest time, like I said, it was my mom dying at 23. That was my this. But now, if you want to get to know me, if you really, really want to get to know me, you need to know that after 25 years of being told life goes downhill after 40, I'm crushing the second act. I knew I'd love Austin so much. This chapter, the second chapter that I was fearing so much, it's been the ride of my life. It's led me to rooms like this. It's led me to poles so much taller than 40 feet. Heights I never, ever dreamed of. And let me tell you one thing. I hate to end on a do, but I'm going to end on it. Let me tell you something from my do as a reporter. I've been so privileged over 25 years to interview some legends who have accomplished so much in the sports world. Nobody, and I mean nobody, hangs on the good. I won a championship. I won the Super Bowl. I won a gold medal. I got the promotion. I got the raise. That is your dessert. And you should enjoy dessert. It's yummy. But the filet mignon that sustains you, you're this, that's the challenges, that's the adversity, that's the poles that led you to where you are today. That is where everybody hangs if you really want to get to know somebody. My challenge to you today, as you continue this incredible day of empowerment, go deeper. Take your who more seriously than your do. Make it a day of purpose. Run to those poles. You will find them everywhere. Don't run from them. Run to them. Leap from them. Figuratively, not literally, but if you literally jump today, please be careful and don't say I said to do that. But look for those poles and help somebody as they are looking or as they are on top of theirs. Do not build contacts. Build relationships, meaningful relationships, with every relationship you have. My this, it just changed again. If you want to get to know me, if you really want to get to know me, you need to know this. I am so grateful to have been in this room, and I am so grateful that it's been a room that none of you allowed to be wasted. So thank you so much for having me today and being here. Thank you.